Welcome to the Mom Manual. Motherhood doesn't come with instructions, but it should. We are on a mission to highlight ordinary moms doing extraordinary things to build the ultimate mom manual. Every week, I have the distinct honor of speaking with women about the lessons they've learned and the inspiration that got them to where they are today. Join us for a conversation that will spark creativity, provide actionable tips, and celebrate the ordinary and extraordinary moments of motherhood. The Mom Manual starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mom Manual. I am Tara Williams, your host, with another exciting guest for you all today. We have really been bringing you some new faces and new topics, and this is one we have never talked about before. So we're going to welcome Molly Johnson. She is an autism consultant with 10 plus years experience working with autistic children. Molly, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on, especially since, you know, this is a new topic for your community.
Yes.
I'm excited to share.
Totally new, something we've never, I mean, I feel like we go round and round with all things sleep, right? As Dreamland Baby founder, of course, we're always talking about that. And we're always talking about like feeding, sleeping, eating, but totally new topic. I'm very excited. Molly and I were chatting prior to starting, and we are going to make sure if you are a listener who does not have a child with an autism diagnosis, that this podcast is still going to be for you. We're going to touch on acceptance, inclusion from neurotypical children. So Molly, before we get into our conversation, tell us about you. How did you get into this? Give us your background, all the things.
Yes, absolutely. So I have a bachelor's degree in special education. I have a master's degree in educational administration and a master's in autism spectrum disorders. And the way that I got started in this role was I was actually an autism teacher. I taught at a public middle school, a public elementary school, and a private autism program. And what I found during my years of teaching is that when my students would go home in the evening, their parents would call me, they would text me, they would email me, and they would say, okay, didn't you work on XYZ behavior at school? Okay, we're seeing it at home. What should I do? Or I know you've worked on these skills, but we're not quite seeing it happen at home. What can I do to support my child at home? And I realized that there's not a ton of support out there for parents for, you know, how to handle skill development, behaviors, communication, setting up an environment to support that child. There's just not a ton of resources out there. So my last year in the classroom, I just randomly started a podcast and thought, you know, this will be fun. If it helps one parent, I am so incredibly happy about that. And it is something that just kind of took off. And after a few months, I didn't return to the classroom after that summer break because there was such a need here. And now I have the pleasure of working with parents from all over the world to help them support their child as much as possible. So it's kind of an accident that I ended up in this role, but it has been such a blessing. I've been able to help and connect with so many parents out there.
That's interesting. So this is not a field of, like, there's not other people that have the same job, or is it becoming like a consultant for this? Or I've never heard of it before.
Right. So yeah, I meet people here and there who do something very similar to me. When I started, I had no idea it was a thing. I just knew parents are asking for my support. They're asking for my guidance. And when I'm helping them, we're making really great progress at home. And so, you know, I had told my husband, I don't know what this role looks like. I don't know how it's going to go exactly. I just know there's a need, and I just feel called to fill this need. I know I have what it takes. I have the experience. You know, I have the history working on these behaviors and skills in the classroom. There's no reason we can't apply the same strategies at home and teach these parents all of these strategies. And it's funny, one of the, you know, topics I'm most known for is potty training, helping parents potty train an autistic child. And it's so funny. I would have never thought that, you know, I would be talking about pee and poop all day, but here I am. It's a big part of my role now.
Wait, that's hilarious. And I think we should get into potty training just in general at some point in this conversation, because that, as a parent, Molly, I know you only have a 9-month-old. I have 4 kids. It's a nightmare. Like, I have 2 girls, I have 2 boys. It's a nightmare for everybody. Always pee on the ground. I mean, you know this better than me, but not fun. And we need all the tips. Let's jump in. So at what point do these children come to you, or infants come to you, or parents? Like, when do you join the journey?
Yeah. So I typically work with the younger side of kids. So anywhere from like 2 to 6 or 7 years old. That's kind of the sweet spot of who I work with. And parents find me after their diagnosis. They probably find me through Instagram or my podcast, but they find me after the diagnosis just for guidance on how do I work on this? How do I address this? How do we make progress on XYZ skill? So after they get the diagnosis is when I work with them. Now, I will say I have worked with parents who, you know, their child is diagnosed with a disability other than autism, but the majority of the families I work with have that diagnosis already.
And at what age, I know you have no part in the actual diagnosis part, but at what age are we typically seeing a diagnosis being given by a medical provider?
Yeah. So for boys, we're seeing a lot of like 3 and 4 year olds, but actually for girls, it's several years later. And there isn't a ton of research out there as to why, besides we know girls typically can mask a lot better. So, you know, they might have those signs, but then they're incredibly great about masking that. And, you know, a lot of parents might relate to this where they see XYZ behaviors or they see meltdowns. They're seeing certain characteristics and traits at home, but then the teacher says, no, he's great. She's great. We don't see that at all. And often what happens is, you know, kids that are aware of their differences, they're almost working in overdrive and they're working so hard to hide that and just to hold it all together as best as they can while they're at school or during that autism assessment. So we see girls doing that a lot more often. And so they often get diagnosed several years later than boys, which I always think is so interesting.
What kind of age are we talking for girls then?
Okay. So I hate to put everybody in the same bucket because that's not realistic.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give you an exact age because what I see when I talk to a lot of parents is they suspect and they just in their gut, they know their child is autistic and, you know, they've tried to push for assessments. They've been told, no, your daughter doesn't have autism. And some kids go until they're like 13, 14 years old without a diagnosis. We're also seeing a large community of adults who are going out and seeking assessments because they know that they've had this feeling of, you know, I don't know quite what it is, but I suspect something. And they're going and exploring this diagnosis and they're getting a late diagnosis in life because, you know, they were one of those kids who masked so well, or, you know, maybe because of economic situations, they weren't able to afford to go get a diagnosis, or maybe where they lived in the world, it just wasn't possible. So regardless of the situation, we're seeing this massive amount of autistic adults come forward and say, I can relate to that child. That diagnosis just wasn't possible for me. So I kind of love that. I love seeing that, you know, people are talking about it more. And I think that's a great resource for parents, you know, getting on social media. And you can look up the hashtag actually autistic, and you can learn so much from these adults who went through similar experiences.
Interesting. Okay. This is not where I thought the conversation was going to go, but I would love to actually better understand. So the children, or I guess really at age 3, your toddler child, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to take a step back for a second. I was actually thinking most kids were diagnosed at like 18 months old. I thought they were very little.
So that's when, you know, parents go to the pediatrician and they start, you know, bringing up concerns. Mm-hmm. A lot of times pediatricians do not have a ton of training. We found that, you know, pediatricians, they don't have a course on autism during their schooling. They don't get a lot of training on this. And, you know, a lot of parents, I hate to, again, put everybody in the same bucket because there are some wonderful pediatricians out there. So I don't want to knock them at all. But a lot of parents feel as if their concerns are swept under the rug. You know, these doctors, they see this child for a 15, 20 minute appointment. So it's really hard to grasp sometimes what the parent is talking about, that big concern that's on their mind. And so then maybe they say, well, before we move forward with anything else, let's get you into early intervention. Let's get you into ABA therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy. Let's go that route and see if we can, you know, make up for some of the differences we're seeing with some therapy services before we explore a diagnosis. So the majority of parents that I speak to, that's kind of the route that they go. then you know your doctor tells you let's get you these services. Well, there's a wait list for a lot of parents. You know, I know some parents who have been in a wait list for almost a year just to get their child into therapy services. So they have the wait list. They have insurance companies to battle with. Every parent's story is a little bit different. In a dream world, you know, once parents go in and they start bringing up these concerns to the pediatrician, they would get them in for an assessment right away, but that's not always the case. Every pediatrician wants to jump, you know, go through certain steps before they have them go seek out, you know, an assessment.
And when you say an assessment, who is giving this assessment?
Yeah, so they're probably seeing a child psychologist for this assessment, someone who specializes in only assessing children for different developmental disabilities. They might go to some neurological developmental pediatrician as well, but most of the families that I speak to, they're going to a psychologist for this.
Okay, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Molly. And if you don't know this, that's totally okay. Is there a, and I understand with autism, and there's also Asperger's, right? So there's really truly a range. You have people who are extremely high functioning that, like you said, maybe are masking symptoms where they're going through their whole life, they're an adult, they don't even know. And then you have children on the other end of the spectrum that will never live alone. Is that accurate? Like that will need full-time caregiving that cannot really function in the world we currently live in. Is that accurate?
So autism, yes, it is truly a spectrum. The characteristics can show up so different from one kid to the next. And you know, that's sometimes what makes the diagnosis process so difficult, is because when you meet one child with autism, you meet one child with autism. There are no two children that are exactly the same and present the same exact characteristics. And yeah, you know, that's what makes it so interesting working with this population of children, because you know, you never know what your day is going to look like. And one strategy that might work for one child, you know, you're gonna have to throw that out the window for the next child. So yes, there is such an incredible wide range of how characteristics show up.
Yeah. So for anyone who's listening and thinking, you know, I've maybe thought my child has autism or is on the spectrum, like when you're working with these families and these kids, what are some of the things? Because I'm not even sure what you mean when you say this. I can only think of the very most extreme cases, right? But somebody who's maybe on the more mild end of the spectrum, I'm like, what does that mean? And what do those kids struggle with? And this all goes into like how you, I'm assuming, are consulting with them and managing them and helping them create a plan. But what are those things?
Yeah. So, you know, parents could see things like restricted and repetitive behaviors, doing the same thing over and over. Some families might see frequent and extreme meltdowns. Some families might see communication differences. And that doesn't mean non-speaking. Every child, their communication differences look a little different from one child to the next. It could be, you know, developmentally, skill development wise, you're seeing that they're not quite grasping skills like their siblings were. But again, it is so hard. So, you know, I don't want you to think I'm being extremely vague with you, but at the same time, I kind of am being vague, because I have to be careful in how I answer some of these questions, because I don't want to squeeze every single child in a box. And, you know, that's really what the adult population is fighting for right now. Don't fit us all in the same box. We're different. Accept all of our differences. And, wow, you know, I don't want a parent of a neurotypical child to hear this episode and think, oh my goodness, my child does the same behavior over
and over. That's me right now.
Autistic. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. So that's why I hate to throw out, you know, some of these characteristics, and I'm trying to be as vague as possible, because you know, there are overlaps. There might be things that a neurotypical child does that could be a characteristic of an autistic child, but then that neurotypical child is not autistic, you know? So I don't want parents to hear these signs or characteristics and get worried.
Well, it's not that. Like I have four kids, and one of my children, one of my daughters, it has constant meltdowns, and it's almost like she needs to step out. Like she gets very overstimulated. So for example, we've had a few birthday parties for her, and it's been an absolute disaster, like just complete meltdown. She can't handle like all the people wanting to talk to her and being around her. And like, both of those, I think we've had maybe three parties, and now I'm like, we're not doing that anymore, have ended up with her like crying in her room, right? Because it was just like she's overstimulated. And she, whenever she's tired, that is when it's just like meltdown mode is happening. Like we know it's happening. Any little thing sets her off. The meltdowns are constant. And I have four other kids and they're all about the same age. So I'm like, what is going on with this one? And as you're talking, I'm like, maybe, I don't know. So, you know, so
I think we're in a situation, we're in 2024 and we have so much information at our fingertips, sometimes too much information, where we get overly concerned because we just know so much sometimes. And, you know, the great thing is, you recognize what is a trigger for your child. A birthday party with so much commotion, so much going on, so many demands put on her to socialize with others. It's not a fit for her, maybe. And the best thing is that you've recognized that and you know that going forward. And, you know, that's the beautiful thing about parenting, is like, it doesn't have to be how our parents had it. It didn't have to be, you know, how we grew up. We don't have to do everything the same exact way. We know so much more about kids and their nervous system and getting overwhelmed and what each individual kid needs. Maybe your daughter's favorite thing in the world is going to the aquarium as a family. And, you know, next birthday party, that's what we're doing. We're doing a family day at the aquarium. She would have so much more fun doing that instead of having to socialize with 20 kids and their two parents that show up for every kid, because that's too much and that's okay.
Yeah. No. And it is very interesting having four children. And I always go back to the nature versus nurture. Cause I'm like, these four kids, my first three are each like 14 months apart, 17 months apart. And then my third and fourth are 3 years apart. So they're all like effectively the same age, right? We're not talking about big age gap here, especially the first three. And so they've all been introduced to sports and they go to the same school and they have the same attention from their mom and dad. And like, all things are equal, but then they act so different. Like two of my kids act the same and then two of the other ones act the same. And I'm just like trying to tease out like another example where I do think maybe one of my daughters and one of my sons is on the spectrum. And this is not from this conversation. That has been kind of a thought of mine. I think my husband might be on the spectrum a little, like very mild. That's been a thought of mine too. But then he has these other traits where I'm like, well, clearly not. So I want to get everybody tested after this call. So you're going to give us some resources at the end. Molly's going to give us all the resources, all the things. But my other son is very noises, really bother him. So we walked in, and this just happened yesterday. We walked into like a food court and he literally went like this. So anyone who was watching, I put my hands over my head, over my ears, and like put my head down, like as if a bomb went off and I'm like sheltering myself. It was so dramatic. And he started screaming, "It's so loud. It's so loud." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, honey." Like, it was like a scene. I was like, "You're fine. Like, do you want to step outside?" Like, it like, as a mom, like almost scared me, because I was like, "What is happening?" And he's like, "The noises." And my husband is very sensitive ears too. But the noise stuff, talk to me about that, because that is part of autism or is not.
It very much could be. So that's the thing about autism. There's a lot of question marks. And there's a lot of, well, maybe it could be, but maybe it isn't. So, you know, that could be a sensory difference that your son has. You know, it's too loud, too many loud noises coming at him all at once. And when he's in an environment where it's so loud, his overstimulation, it's through the roof and he can't focus on anything else. He can't focus on going to find an empty table to sit down, because all his brain is concentrating on is how loud this is and how to get rid of this loud sound. So, you know, maybe his behaviors look a little different in that moment because he is truly trying to figure out how do I lower this dysregulation? How do I get to a calmer state? Because I cannot physically or mentally focus on anything else in this moment. So this is another one of those answers where you ask me the question and I'm like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, you know? But I will say the phrase, so a lot of people use the phrase, "We're all a little autistic." And I actually don't agree with that. If you talk to an autistic adult, they would probably be a little offended by that, because they think they are, you know, I know I'm not like you, you know, I there are clear differences. I can't function in XYZ environment, because of autism. I can't do XYZ that you can do because of autism. I have XYZ holding me back that doesn't hold you back because of autism. I don't get accommodations in the workplace that I need because I'm autistic, you know? So I hate to, you know, say like, don't say that, but I also want to.
I think it's very appreciated. And this is, you know, I think one of those emerging topics where, like you said, more people are stepping out and saying, hey, like, I think I might be autistic. I think I might be on the spectrum, where 10, definitely 20 years ago, it was not talked about. It was swept under the rug. It was maybe shamed, right? And now it's like, hey, this is who I am. This makes me me, and I'm going to celebrate that. And I love that at this time and place in life, that's where we are. And social media really amplifies that. But with that, then comes hurt feelings if other people don't have the right words or phrases. So Molly, you're doing me a service by saying that. And you know,
I just never want to diminish somebody else's struggles, you know, because sometimes that's just such a vague statement and it can unintentionally diminish somebody else's struggles. So that's why I say that. And again, going to social media and learning from autistic adults is such a powerful resource.
Actually autistic. Yeah. That's a hashtag.
I still am learning every single day. None of us are perfect. None of us are going to get everything right that we say. We're going to learn things along the way, you know, that, you know, just teach us new ways of thinking about it. You know, autism isn't wrong. It's just different.
Different. Yeah. You know, I think, and for myself, I do have a diagnosis of ADHD, and I actually look at it and I think that it's part of who I am. Also, as an adult, I am moving all the time, and that's unnerving to some people. So that part I don't love. However, I am a small business owner, and we always have a million balls juggling in the air, and my brain operates in a way that I can like see and think of every single one of these different things. And while I'm in a conversation, I am like already thinking about the next conversation. And so for me, like, I have thought about it. I can say, okay, this is a, you know, something that makes me different or that people don't appreciate, but I'm like, but this is who I am. And it's part of why I'm successful, because I can manage like a workload and a just chaos in a way that doesn't stress me out. Like, I've actually said to people, chaos, I thrive in chaos. Like, the more things you put on my plate, like, the actually more effective I am. I'm also like, if you don't like me and me moving around a lot bothers you, like, okay, get a new friend. Like, sorry.
I love this self-awareness. And I love that you see the strengths that you bring to the table. That's beautiful. And, you know, going forward with your two kids that you say, you know, you're starting to see some differences in your two children, you know, pointing out their strengths so that they one day have this same mindset, whether they have a disability or not, you know, still knowing that, yeah, I might struggle in this area, but guess what? I thrive in these areas. These things are what makes me special. I think that's beautiful that you can recognize that about yourself.
So Molly, on that point, you know, you work with a lot of children with autism, and like how I can think of my ADHD, it's like my brain moves very quickly, but I can also like process things quickly and I can move along quickly, which helps me in business. What are some things that you say, you know, for the child who's autistic? Again, we're making blanket statements, but maybe you just pick a couple kids that you've worked with and say, this is something that makes them unique and special, but here's how it's an advantage or a positive.
Yeah. So, you know, an autistic child could pay great attention to detail and really value and respect those details that you and I might look over. They mean what they say. If they say something, it is written in stone. It is set in stone. They mean it. It's going to happen. It's going to play out. Where other people, they might be a little wishy-washy with what they say and everything.
Very literal.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. We see it all the time. Very literal. You know what's funny? So a lot of kids that I say kids that I work with, I don't work with the kids. I work with the parents, but a lot of families, several of the families that I've worked with, their kids are, you know, very into a particular interest. You know, they're so they zone in on one specific topic, one interest, and they can tell you everything under the sun about that topic, things that we would know nothing about. You know, I was just working with a parent who it was actually a grandparent, and she was really struggling getting her grandson potty trained. Her grandson is autistic and lives with them. And I said, what are his interests? Tell me what he loves. If you gave him 20 minutes to do anything in the world, what would he be doing? And she said, oh my goodness, he loves history, and he loves like the history of American presidents. So he can tell you like every single detail of every single president, like that nobody else even knows about.
He
was around 6. So I said, okay, let's tie this into potty training. Why don't we also go back to every single president and let's talk about what the toilets looked like back then? What are the bathrooms like? What were, you know, bathroom behaviors and etiquette like back then? So she is currently because she's trying to get him interested in the toilet because he's really resisting. So she's trying to pair that unique special interest with a skill that we really want him to have, which is using the toilet independently. So we're pairing those two together because we know he already thrives in that one area. Let's somehow merge the two together. So there's so many different strengths, but I think that's, as a parent, you know, it's our duty to find those strengths and let that child know, because there is not one child out there in the world who has all struggles or all differences. You know, there are things they excel at. There are things that they really strive at. And I think it's important, you know, you might see some concerns in your child, but also you need to remind yourself what is going really well, what they're really exceeding at. And I do that with all of my clients. You know, they'll write to me and say, okay, we've started working on XYZ in the first 3 days, this is how it went. And they kind of give me a little summary, and they're telling, you know, at the end, like they'll say, it's just not going well. And I'm like, wait, hold up. Reading through those 2-3 paragraphs you just wrote me, I can pick out 5 things that are going extremely well. So sometimes we put as adults, and I get this, I'm a new mom, so I find myself doing this too, but we see something that a child's struggling with and kind of like raises those, you know, we're all perked up and really pinned in on this. And we're worrying so much about that. We're not seeing what is going right and what is working and what that child is doing well at. So yes, while those concerns are probably very valid, don't sell your child short. Don't sell yourself short on everything that you've worked on with your child, because there are strengths there as well.
And I think this is a perfect segue. We wanted to talk a little bit about acceptance and inclusion. So if you have a child who is not autistic, but maybe has an autistic classmate or autistic neighbor, can you give us some language, words, behaviors, just how to, you know, make that child feel most included, or just, I shouldn't even say included, just not different.
Right. So I don't have the exact phrase or words for you, but what I will say is your behavior matters. You know, how you show up and treat that child when they're in a group setting, you know, people can pick up on that. That parent who feels like they're never truly included at the school birthday party, you know, what can you do to make that that parent and that child feel a little more accepted? Can you go up to that parent and start a conversation with them? You know, when that child is doing something that looks a little different, do we have to all stare? No, because they can't even sometimes go down the grocery aisles without getting stares from people, and it makes them never want to go out in public again. So I think our behaviors matter so much, and having compassion, seeing that child as another human being, you know, like I said, getting online, and sometimes social media is a horrible place to be, but it's also a really beautiful place to be, where people are willing to tell their story. They're willing to speak about what it's like being a parent of an autistic child. I am not a parent of an autistic child, so I have never been in that parent's shoes, but I will say that going on social media, there are a million bajillion accounts out there of parents saying, look, this is what it looks like raising my child. Please be accepting of it. Please be nice to us. Please teach your child to want to play with my child on the playground. So, you know, this might start with working on it at home with your neurotypical child, maybe like reading picture books, or, you know, Daniel Tiger has an episode with one of the characters being autistic. So maybe it's watching that, or maybe it's just simply having a conversation about how everybody's different. And sometimes people's differences are more noticeable, more apparent. And that doesn't make them any less of a human. That doesn't mean we shouldn't want to be friends with them and want to interact with them. These differences can be beautiful as well. Differences make the world go round. So a lot of conversations happening at home about, yes, we might recognize it, but don't treat somebody differently because you see them acting differently in the grocery store or at a birthday party.
No, this might be a silly question, but are children with autism integrated in public classrooms, or are they maybe put in a different classroom? Does that depend on where they are in the spectrum? Like, what does, I mean, obviously I know there's kids high functioning, they're just in classrooms, but were there, because I'm thinking of my kids and I do not think they have any children that were in public school in their classes with disabilities of any kind that I'm aware of. So I'm like, wait a minute, but I have four
not
kids.
Know it because exactly. Not every, yeah, there's no look to autism. You know, a lot of parents will get the comment, well, your kid doesn't look autistic.
They look perfect.
What on earth does autism look like?
There's no,
you just might not know, but this is another answer. That's a yes and a no. There are some kids who are integrated into general education classes, and there might be a teacher pushing in for support, and the rest of the kids in the class don't even know that that teacher is pushing in to support one or two students. There could be a student who, you know, maybe they go to most general education classes and they go to another specialized class for another subject. There could be a self-contained class with more high needs students, you know, 10, 11, 12 students in this one class with a teacher and several paraprofessionals that are servicing and supporting those more, you know, high needs kids. So another one of my answers that is like, maybe yes, maybe no.
Yeah. Well,
if the teachers are doing it right in those general education classes, you shouldn't know if somebody has a disability. Every child should be treated, you know, the same. We shouldn't be pointing out that they're different, you know? So I bet your children do have other classmates that do have some hidden disability. And I think your teachers are doing a great job of including those students is what it sounds like.
That, you know, I remember growing up, we had at my elementary school, there was a class of children with severe disabilities of all kinds of, and I guess I should ask my kids, I don't know. And you know, this is a takeaway for anybody who's listening to find out like what, I mean, it's not something we typically think about asking, but you know, maybe there are children in their classroom that are a little bit different. And as an adult, we can ask a few questions and figure out on our own, even if our kids don't have the words.
Education has changed so much. And I know a lot of parents feel like I'm in a tough spot advocating for my kid at school. It's not going well. But at the same time, advocacy and speaking loudly about, you know, getting kids the supports and services they need, it is working. We are moving the needle forward. It might be slowly in the education system, but you know, I think about when I was in school, I remember my middle school still, you know, the special education room with very high needs children. It was in the basement at the furthest point of the school. They were truly like hidden away in the school. And we don't see that anymore, you know? So I was talking to a parent recently who, you know, she was just tired from all of the advocacy. And, you know, there's nothing I can truly say to make it easier because unfortunately she is going to have to advocate for a lot of her son's needs. But I reminded her of something to kind of pep her up a bit and reminded her that we are seeing major progress. You know, teachers are teaching differently because of advocacy. Therapists are servicing their clients differently because of advocacy. You know, we're seeing less of a negative stigma in society when we talk about autism because of advocacy. So while yes, it is so frustrating that some of these parents, they have to be the squeaky wheel and keep saying and keep pushing to get the oil, you know, but they're changing an experience for a parent after them without even knowing it. They are literally paving the way for other parents. And you know, I can't say that makes it necessarily any easier for parents who are like in the thick of it right now, advocating at schools for what their child needs. But I hope it makes parents realize that they're making a difference, not only for their child, because they're fighting for what their child needs, but you're literally paving the way for the kids and the parents and the families that come after you that are in a similar experience as you. And I think that is—
Oh my gosh, Molly, it's going to make me cry. That's so—
Advocate. I always tell people, speak up. And you keep speaking up until something changes. The squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Always.
Eventually, always. They might just be sick of you asking, so they'll give you what you want just to shut,
you up. Yes.
Advocacy works.
This was such an amazing conversation. And thank you. As with any heavy topic we have on this podcast, I am always bumbling through things. And I am learning so much from all of our guests. And I hope everyone listening learned some too. Molly, if people want to find you, connect with you, share you to their families that may know someone with a child with autism, where can everybody find you?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to connect. I have an Instagram and my handle is The Autism Consultant. That's also the name of my podcast. So anywhere you listen to podcasts, it is a completely free resource. I have hundreds of episodes on behavior, skill development, potty training, communication, visual supports. I also have lovely guests on. So just look up The Autism Consultant and you can get started there. But I look forward to connecting with parents. And I loved this. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Molly. Have a great day.